Welcome to the Digital Families Podcast. I'm Leonie Smith. I'm a digital family parent coach and e-safety educator, and this podcast is all about learning how to use the digital technology in our homes with more safety and balance. My guest today is Sonia Livingstone, who is a professor in the Department of Media and Communications at the London School of Economics and Political Science. She is the author of 20 books on media audiences, especially children, and young people's risks and opportunities, media literacy, and rights in the digital environment. So we'll talk a little bit about that as we go through. I have interviewed Sonia before on my podcast, so you can always go back and have a listen to that one. Her latest book is Parenting for a Digital Future, which is really fascinating and based on a whole lot of studies that she and her co-writer have done over there. There's a little tag on that, Parenting for a Digital Future, How Hopes and Fears About Technology Shape Children's Lives. Sonia, welcome to the Digital Families Podcast again.
It's great to be here with you, Leonie.
It has been a little while since we last spoke. I can't even remember if I think we were in COVID when we last spoke. Mm-hmm. And one thing that I'm noticing in my practice and talking to parents and also teaching staff is that there has been a massive increase in screen time. I know that we spoke about that last time, and what most parents are coming to me with is questions about how to wind that screen time back and reintroduce some of the activities that their children were doing before screen time. What are you hearing about in your conversations with parents or any of the research that you're doing now that we're sort of in our second year of COVID? Mm-hmm. About how parents are actually coping with that now that kids are all going back to schools?
It's a good question, isn't it? Because I think when during COVID, we've spent a lot of time saying we want to get back to how things were before. But sometimes people were always saying, actually, before wasn't brilliant. And when we come out of this, we'll do things better or differently. So there's quite a lot of hopes that parents have about the kind of now and the kind of period of unlocking, the process of unlocking and freeing children again. So what I'm hearing, I guess, from both parents and children is, you know, number one, everyone has really understood how kids do value face-to-face, in-person play and interaction and social life. So, you know, the big drive during the lockdown really was, how do we get out? How do we see our friends again in person? How do we feel free of not always being stuck with our family within four walls? So, you know, parents are pushing at an open door to try to get kids away from a complete reliance on the screens, really. But habits have been formed and people have really got used to doing a lot of things on the screen. So I think it's not a matter of changing children's desires. Their desires are there. They do want to get out. But it is a matter of changing habits and changing routines, because we've all got a bit homebound and kind of used to just, you know, staring at our screens so much. What can parents do? I don't think, you know, it's not about going to theme parks or doing ambitious and exciting and expensive things. It is about, you know, building in time to go to the park when you can each day, or saying yes when inviting kids for play dates, or you know, just the everyday things, even going shopping together. I think children are really welcoming those opportunities. But we have also learned, a lot of what's happening on screens is okay. And so it's not a matter of dragging them away from all screen time, but mixing it up and recognising when something valuable is happening through a screen and when children just need, you know, a bit of a push, bit of motivation to remember there's a life outside.
One of the constant things that I'm hearing from parents is with some kids, is that they have lost interest in a lot of the things that they used to do. So a recent parent said to me that her son used to read books a lot and now he doesn't want to read books at all. And everything that she's been trying to get that child off the screen has not been working. And you've been writing a fair bit. I've been following with interest some of the things that you've been saying about free play and how important that is to children, and not only offline but also online. Can you explain a little bit to parents about what free play actually is? I think I've got a pretty good idea, but you know, to be specific about it, and what you've found out about the benefits of free play and how that can be integrated into, again, you know, the sort of everyday lives of parents.
I really wanted to in the research, we really want to kind of break down this idea that children's play offline is good and free and led by them, and children's play online is always kind of stuck in a commercial gaming product. And one of the things I thought was really fascinating about lockdown was how children were finding online ways to play freely online with some quite unexpected apps, like we were interviewing kids who were saying they were playing hide and seek on Zoom, for example. I thought of Zoom as a, you know, kind of work app, but that's what they had to see their friends. So they would play hide and seek. And then we interviewed kids who would, you know, they would kind of bring their pets on Zoom and their toys, and they would enter the screen, you know, from sideways around. And there was a lot of play. And actually, we interviewed some youth organisations during the lockdown who were trying to find exactly playful ways to free children to be themselves in online spaces, because that's all there was. So we interviewed kind of theatre groups and youth groups, and there's a lot of creativity that can be done online. It's not just turn on your favourite game and get kind of locked into that until it's time to have a meal or something. What we were trying to do in that work was recognize that actually, I think parents, children, everyone knows the joy of just free play. The child playing with the cardboard box became our kind of perfect example, because so many parents told us about how children love to play with the box more than the thing inside it. And then we said, okay, so what do you do with the cardboard box? And then they would say what you really want to hear about childhood. Your imagination can run free. You can make anything you want. You can be anyone you want. The cardboard box can be a spaceship. It can be a school. It can be, you know, absolutely anything you want it to be. And I really want to understand, where is that sense of freedom and imagination and agency online? When do children say online, I can be anything, I can imagine, you know, I can make the world the way I want it, I can play freely and kind of exercise my imagination? And some children said some of the apps and games they play offer that, like Minecraft was a common one that is a bit like the cardboard box or is a bit like Lego. And others said they didn't know where to go, and they didn't know how to find that kind of sense of freedom online. And that became the challenge. And it's not easy for parents, because it's not easy, you know, for them to know what all the possibilities are. That's why, you know, folk like you are so important in kind of, you know, letting parents be realize what the range of possibilities is online. But also, you know, we heard a lot of kids talking about playing between the online and the offline, kind of building a bridge between them in a way, and finding a way to play a game that would be maybe playing with toys in the room, but with a friend on Zoom who was playing with the toys in their room. Okay. And, you know, it would be kind of hybrid, and some of the play would be digital and some of it would be in person. And so I think there's a lot of creativity to be developed if we think about digital play as not just playing this game or playing that game, but, you know, remembering the joy of the cardboard box.
Are you finding that overall as a society that we are structuring far too much time of our kids play?
Absolutely. And I think, you know, I understand there's a lot of pressures on parents and on educators in relation to children, but So we see, for example, schools are reducing the amount of free play they allow. You know, we can, I know in Britain, the survey showed that the time children can spend in the playground has been cut and cut and cut. And also it's a kind of common punishment to cut the playtime, though actually probably, you know, naughty kids are precisely needing a bit of time to let off steam and just to get out there and you know, do something under their own motivation. And then parents, yeah, we're under a lot, parents are under a lot of pressure to support homework, to make sure children's lives are kind of constantly learning and productive and goal directed. But, you know, lots of the research on the importance of play in childhood, and the why I love that play is a right in the UN Convention on the Rights of the child has a right to play, is that it's through play that children learn to be, kind of take responsibility for themselves, to come up with their own ideas, to feel confident that they can act in the world and generate new creative possibilities with each other. So, you know, play has a lot of functions, but it, if you're very goal oriented, it can look like wasting time or, you know, not being productive.
Yeah,
or
I think what I hear from parents is they fear that if they don't structure a lot of their children's time, that they've got a child at home that then goes on the screen. So a parent said to me this week, our son has a lot of things to do after school, lots of extracurricular. If I don't do that, he spends the whole time at home on screens. So that's also coming into it as well, this and this concern that you're right, that if they haven't, if they're not doing the tennis lessons, if they're not going to, you know, all the sort of extracurricular stuff, music lessons, whatever it might be, that they might be missing out on opportunities.
Well, they might, but also what we're seeing is a generation, surveys are beginning to show, who are becoming a bit more anxious, more mental health problems. I think some quite kind of, I interview quite a lot of children who've become quite kind of cautious, sort of with an eye to the adult, what is expected of them. They feel the pressure of parental expectations, and there's a lot of pressure coming from schools these days. So sometimes screen time is a way for children to let off steam and just waste some time, just scroll pointlessly, they'll say, because they need some downtime. Sometimes it's their kind of window into a youth space or a childish space where adult expectations don't bear down on them, and they can just kind of, you know, follow silly memes or laugh at each other's jokes or just hang out.
Okay. Because
they hang out online when parents don't always let them outside to hang out offline. In my exploration of play, you know, I've always done all my research on technology, but I've been reading more and more about the literature on play and all the work that people are doing to think about the home as a play space. Perhaps not always tidy everything up, but leave a few cardboard boxes around for little kids to kind of, you know, don't. There's even ways of leaving an intriguing kind of pile of what you might have thought was the recycling, kind of, you know, empty plastic bottles and bits of paper, and just leave it in the corner of the room. And, you know, not for your teenager,
see what happens,
obviously, but for a little child might, you know, find that intriguing.
When they get to teenagers, Sonia, they start to do that themselves and leave all kinds of
absolutely
things
do.
All in the corner.
Well, I think they're defining
we want them to clean it up.
Yeah, I like the idea of thinking about the design of the home, and we can think about the same in our public spaces. You know, how do we there's some experiments to design a play street, or maybe a park isn't always about neat flower beds and, you know, proper benches.
Making their own cubby house is really
upside
fun.
Upside down, yeah.
We had in our neighbourhood, we have a pond across the road, and there was a little kind of I won't call it a shed, but something like that. The neighbourhood kids all got together and nicked all this stuff that was being thrown out from people's homes and a building site nearby, I might add, and created the most amazing cubby house. And of course, the council came and took it all down 3 days later. But,
well,
you know,
isn't that a shame? Because that's what, so what parents might do is kind of, you know, think about what the children can walk to around where you live. And then think, you know, is there a space? And it might look to an adult like quite a untamed or disruptive space, but to kids, that might look like a possibility, a place to go and, you know.
Yeah, they do that around here, but they get told off. Yeah. They build a lot of little mountain bike tracks and things, and then the council comes along and takes them all down.
Well, as a society, we don't value play, and we think children are wasting their time and being messy. But they are looking for the spaces that adults haven't already tidied up and made productive and purposeful.
So, yes, you're right. So people's homes, I know there's a lot of families these days will buy, again, structured play items for their homes. Mm. So what you're saying is buy things that aren't obviously already created for them so they can create their own thing. And that's something else you just mentioned too, which is about kids having these sort of expectations around parents. The other issue that is really interesting that's been coming up a lot from parents contacting me is about tracking apps and parental controls. Children being quite moderated and controlled on these devices. So while we were talking about before, you were saying about kids going to an online space where the parents aren't really aware of what's going on and they're not having those expectations placed on them. With some kids, that's not happening online. The apps that parents can now use on devices can be so controlling that their messages can be read. They get indications of which apps the children are spending most time on. We know that there's an explosion of surveillance of our children, including in colleges, in schools where they're now using facial recognition. And I've seen you quoted recently where you were obviously quite concerned about that. What are your thoughts about the explosion in parental controls and tracking apps on kids and how parents should use those with respect to the right of a child to privacy perhaps? And how long would a parent use those types of technology for?
Right. Are we gonna track our kids until the 18th birthday and then turn
I've
it off?
I've actually had parents say to that. I have had parents say that to me, that they are going to have, they are banning certain things and tracking their kids until they are 18, because under the age of 18, living in their home, the parent sees that the child is totally under their control.
So this was really the kind of key focus of our Parenting for Digital Future book. I've become very attuned to the kind of language. I mean, I understand parents' anxiety, but in a way that's the language you'd use of an animal, not a child. You know, under your control, it's my house, so you'll do what I say within it. I'm going to track you and control you and police you. And that that kind of sense of the parent positioning themselves as the kind of the police, the authority, the authoritarian, the disciplinarian, and the child becomes, you know, by definition, bad, secretive, deceptive, wayward, irresponsible. I just find that such an unfortunate vision of the relationship between parents and children. So if you kind of roll back to how, you know, What is it we want, and what is it that we imagine as an ideal? Surely we want parents as a mentor, as a guide, sometimes as a fellow playmate when the kids are young, sometimes, you know, advisor. Yes, parents know more about the risks and problems of the world, but it's a relationship that is, there's so much more that parenting involves than controlling and tracking and limiting and punishing. And we kind of have lost space really for thinking, you know, how do parents mentor? How do they encourage? What do they want to encourage? How do they enable? How can they bring opportunities for their child? And if they are the police, if they're the disciplinarian, the child is just going to be always looking for a way to escape and to, you know, get away from that kind of critical eye. So I think, and in my parenting research, you know, some parents are taking that route, others are taking a different route. Others are saying, you know, I'm going to be more of a friend, I'm going to be more of a kind of partner in crime, if you like, because there are so many roles parents can play. And if you want a child who you know, learns a bit through experience, sometimes has to learn the hard way, sometimes has to fall over and pick themselves up and kind of, you know, survive life's tough knocks, then the parent always kind of controlling, containing is not going to generate that. And
there has to be
clear. They don't want it. Yeah.
Well, I think there has to be a balance. There's no black and white answer to this, Sonia. There has to be a balance with fair parent boundaries to protect a child from getting hurt in the same way as, no, you can't drive a car at the age of 13. I don't approve of you, you know, taking illegal drugs and drinking at the age of 9 or 10 or whatever it might be. So there's fair parental boundaries and to keep a child safe. And I know the parents I speak to that have, that are very keen on using some of these tracking apps with their kids. It's done out of love for the child. It's done because they fear the child will get hurt. And if they can find any way to prevent their child from, I mean, there is a couple of these apps, including I think it's Life 360, shows the parent how fast the child is moving. So if they're in a speeding car, for instance, the parent knows that that's happening. Because an alert goes off on the app on their side. So for a parent, they're thinking, well, this is life and death. So
this is, you're talking about something so rare. You're talking about the idea that we would, I guess I, you know, I mean, clearly I'm worried about tracking children because 99.99% of children are not going to be abducted. They're not going to be in that fast car, but their whole lives are going to be lived as if they might be.
Yeah,
I mean, it's as if we're living with our children as if, you know, the catastrophe is always around the corner. And that itself is a stressful way to live. That itself brings anxieties and worries that makes children cautious, that makes parents suspicious, that breaks a trust relation between parent and child because everyone is just so. And that's what I see in children. I see, you know, a lot of kind of tension, anxiety, caution. And a distrust of parents. So survey after survey says if something bad did happen to me online, I wouldn't tell my parents.
Yeah. And because, what were the reasons, Sonia, that they gave for that?
Because the parents would overreact. They wouldn't understand why I was in that situation in the first place. So they'd block me, they'd ban me, they'd, you know, I wouldn't be able to see my friends anymore. It's in terms of the balance of children finding a way to kind of grow up with guidance, with guardrails, but also with agency and to make their own decisions, you know, that balance is not, things are out of balance if the parent is constantly watching and constantly tracking and constantly anxious. There isn't particularly more evidence of children being, there's no evidence of children more being abducted or hurt on the streets or any of those things than there's ever been. Actually, children are much better. There's less, fewer children drinking, smoking, getting
pregnant. They're all being tracked by their parents, that's things. Why.
who knows, I don't think so.
They have a different culture. They have a different culture. That, as far as, you know, the types of things that we got up to. I mean, I've had conversations with my kids about growing up in the 70s and early 80s, and they're absolutely gobsmacked. And they're like, "How did you stay alive?" And I'm like, "I know, because we were so much more free range than our own children, and."
So many parents say that, so maybe the question is, what do parents want for their child? Because you don't want them going out. You don't want them, you know, doing things that you can't kind of see and monitor. You don't want them on the screens. So what is the vision of what childhood is meant to be like? And maybe that's the conversation we need to have, because it's almost like everything is wrong. And children often feel, you know, like that classic, the parent comes into the room and says, "Whatever you're doing, stop it." You know, that's sometimes how children feel. That unless they're studying all the time, is that what we want? Or don't we want children laughing, messing about, having fun, experiencing the unpredictable, coming up with their own crazy ideas and seeing if it can work out, learning from experience. You know, if we want that for our children, which is what developmental psychologists say is what allows someone to grow up to be a mature, responsible adult. Parents have to figure out where children can find those spaces. And I think positively that's the invitation, you know, whether it is, and sometimes that means being off the leash, unobserved. If you're observed the whole time, it's chilling. You know, you don't feel free. You don't feel trusted.
No, and I think you're absolutely right there. There's absolutely a time for using some parental controls when kids are in primary school to prevent them from stumbling across pornography and all that kind of stuff. But you at some point, usually when the child is around 12 or 13, parents have to start backing off, because otherwise they are going to do everything out of your view anyway. You'll see only the things they want you to see. And it does create this cat and mouse game with kids, depending on the type of child.
Yeah, I agree. But I think I wouldn't quite say parents back off when the child's 12 or 13, because actually 12 or 13 is quite a difficult age for children, both online and offline. I would say it's a time for parents to change the role and become kind of, you know, move more into being the person that their child will tell when something goes wrong.
Yes.
Being more the person that the child has some kind of fun, trusted activity with, even if it's only once a week you watch a film together, and there's that moment when the child can say, actually, I'm a bit worried about these messages I'm getting online, whatever. Yeah. You know, that's it's a change of role, but I think it's not just back off, but become the person that they will confide in. And that's quite hard, actually.
Yeah, I suppose when I'm saying backing off, I mean scanning all their messages and all that kind of stuff. I mean, it's too much at 12 and 13. They do need some space. So, it's been fantastic talking to you again, Sonia. Thank you very much for your valuable time. You're doing absolutely fascinating work, and I'm always, you know, reading all the stuff that you're sharing.
It's such fun to keep doing the research with families, because there's always new stuff coming up.
Yeah. I know, it's an ever-changing world. Sonia, where can people find out more about your fabulous book and all the research you're doing?
Oh, thank you. Well, actually, I put everything on my website at sonialivingstone.net. So that's kind of simple. The Parenting for Digital Future book is on my blog, parenting.digital. And the work about play is at the Digital Futures Commission. So digitalfuturescommission.org.uk.
Fabulous. Thank you so much.
All right. Brilliant. Great to talk to you again, Leonie.
And thanks for everyone for listening to another episode of the Digital Families Podcast. If you like this podcast, please leave us a review or some feedback on YouTube or your favorite podcast app, wherever you're listening to us. I'd love to hear what you think. Maybe you've got a suggestion for a potential guest now that I'm back up and running it again. And tune in again next episode for our next chat about all things digital and how it affects families.